Welcome to Wellness Spring. In this inspiring episode, Blair Beatty, the director of Farmers Footprint Australia, shares his deeply personal journey from breakdown to breakthrough. Blair went from feeling lost and disconnected to leading one of Australia's most inspiring regenerative movements. In this raw and hopeful conversation, he shares his personal journey, how he founded Farmers Footprint Australia, and what he's learned from listening to the land and the people who care for it. Join us for a heartfelt conversation about healing ourselves by healing the land and the power of living a life rooted in purpose, service, and soul. Welcome, Blair, to Wellness Spring. It's so wonderful to finally have you on the show.
It's a pleasure to be here, and thank you so much for inviting me on. I look forward to a beautiful conversation, and also thanks for bringing so many conversations to light in the work that you do.
Thank you. And I believe from our last conversation, you've just returned from an ag venture from around Australia. Can you give us some highlights on that?
Yeah, it was such a humbling and beautiful time that we had. We ended up doing a sort of a figure of eight around Australia, and it was the drive behind it was very much from a not-for-profit farmer's footprint perspective. It was to really get a sense of where agriculture and the people behind agriculture are at in Australia. I'd found that I'd been making lots of assumptions through hearsay and third parties, and I really didn't know what was happening out there. I kind of knew a little bit from, but I really wanted to get a sense of that reality. And also, it was a great opportunity to bring my family along and have what was an amazing, beautiful time with my two boys and my wonderful partner as a family unit. You know, trekking across the country and not quite knowing where we're going to end up, but trusting it that we would find who we needed to speak to and what we needed to do. And it was exactly that. I had so many beautiful conversations with amazing people that are doing incredible things on our landscape and providing nutritious food for their communities. I also sat around tables with people that were struggling and people that were found that they couldn't find a way anymore within their farm and their agriculture at large. So it was very dynamic, and I certainly got a sense of the spectrum of where we're at. And I feel as if now I can really speak somewhat with some authority as to what the hell's going on out there and what we need to do to see the change that we all know is possible in our food system to bring back some sort of harmony with our landscapes, with ourselves, and with the planet at large.
Yeah, I totally resonate with what you're saying, because when Brian and I returned here from France post-COVID, we were fortunate to borrow a friend's camper van, and we come from a yachty background, so it was totally something new, and we were always sort of looking down, oh no, I could never be a camper vanner. But we ended up buying our own van and converting it during one of the 16-week lockdowns in New South Wales. And we haven't looked back. And what we found while we were traveling, that we were devastated with the amount of degradation with the land. So my heart was, you know, going out to Mother Earth and sending healing to Mother Earth. And like you, Blair, we met so many incredible people, and listening to their stories, there's so much hardship out there. A lot of people are homeless or living in camper vans. People were even coming round. There was one elderly gentleman, he said the rent in the council housing commission had gone up, and the pension hadn't really matched it, so he couldn't even afford that. So he'd had this camper van, and he was going around collecting the plastic bottles, to get the 10 cents. And loads of other places, and you said you were with your family, and we met lots of people who were doing homeschooling and taking their children around so they could be connected with nature. And it was really heartwarming that a lot of them were, really learning more by being in nature about how things grow and also about themselves. They were looking in more. And one grandmother told me that she was taking her kids to all the museums and different places and finding out the history. And of course, with young children, the staff are really more welcoming to tell them the stories. So I think to have real live experience. But then I started interviewing farmers, and it's heartbreaking to hear their journey. Because most of them are extremely exhausted, which, I hadn't put into the equation because I just thought everybody would have a big team working together. But that's not the case because of all the pressures to get food out there and so forth. And, if you're a conventional farmer, you have lots of deadlines and big mortgages. And I know the rate of just from talking to some of these farmers, a lot of them are very anxious and depressed. And from scientific data or research, I know that one every 10 days a farmer commits suicide. So did you experience any of that as well, or what are your thoughts?
Yes, there was a Norco report that came out, I think, in 2023, and from those surveyed, I think it was something around 40% had considered suicide or self-harm, which is pretty damning. And I certainly saw that across multiple landscapes and multiple regions. And I've heard those stories. I've had conversations with others. I've had conversations with sons of farmers, which are concerned about the welfare of their succession, and their. I think the crux of that is our disconnection. Our disconnection from ourselves, from nature. We've been sort of forced into this way of producing food that only serves a small amount, and that's big global interests. It doesn't serve the farmer at large. They can vary between having a great crop one year and super challenged the other year, because that's the unfortunate nature of farming. But they're forced into a way of farming which is not harmonious with the natural rhythms and natural systems, nor their own health or wellness. You've got large institutions that will support a certain way of farming and not support another way of farming. We've got a commodity market where they're told how much they're going to get paid for whatever they're growing. And unfortunately, that doesn't suffice for abundance. That's just another scarcity mentality. And on the back of that, and the byproduct of that, is stress and isolation and disconnection. And I think one of the things that came out of that experience, that on-ground experience, was what can we do as a small not-for-profit here in Australia? How can we lean into this and be of service to this? And that's where our retreats for farmers was born. We realized, yeah, we can do something. We can take these beautiful individuals that really care for their landscape. That essentially forced to farm in a certain way, but know that it may not be the best way or the way that they truly want to, but they've got too much at risk to change. We thought if we could whisk them off the farm for a few days and reinvigorate their love for self and their connection to themselves, and build a beautiful, safe container of other farmers in the room, we might be able to, share some of those health and wellness secrets that are lost in the crap that we see out there. Like we can speak to light and water and magnetism and these essential things for life on Earth and health for us. And through being in that container, they can maybe transmute some of that trauma and share some of those challenges, which they're not able to mostly because they're with other farmers. They're with people that understand who they are and the pressures that they're under. And through other processes like breath work, maybe we can help shift some of that and allow them to go back on farm and start taking care of themselves at the first instance, because I think we all need to do that before we can care for anything else. And we had a couple of retreats last year that were super transformative, and we sort of, that proof of concept came about. So that's a big mission of ours this year, is to get more farmers off farm and give them the love that they deserve and they need, and some of the tools and essentials about what they can do to be the best versions of themselves. And how can we work with challenge, lean into challenge, and use processes to transmute that into. And I think a big thing is reopening our heart centers and moving a little bit out of this into this, and finding ways to do that in a daily practice. And be essentially the people that we want to be on earth, for ourselves, for our families and our communities.
Yeah, it's, as you mentioned, come out of your head and into your heart, is so important. It's the way forward. And I got goosebumps when you said that you were bringing the farmers out so that they could be loved and nourished, and you know, nourishing their soul, because they are supporting life on earth in many ways, and most of the general public don't acknowledge that. You know, most people don't know where their food comes from, you know, and how it is grown and so forth. And they are exhausted because they have a lot of pressures. Some of them, you know, a lot of them live in the middle of nowhere, so their children go away for schooling. They've got the pressure of paying for schooling. And when they're, you know, out of the environment, a lot of them don't want to go back. Some of the farmers encourage it because there's not enough money for them on the farm, and others are devastated because, you know, they can't make ends meet and can't afford to employ anyone, and we're looking forward to the children being there and taking on the farm. So there's a lot of pros and cons, but just the stress. And then when you're tired and exhausted, doesn't matter what your career is, if you're really exhausted, your family is gonna, you know, suffer, your quality time with your wife or your partner, and you know, there's going to be breakdowns of relationships. And from some of the farmers I'm talking to, you know, it's like they feel shame that they can't get their farm up and running, you know, as to at the best possible way, and the financial burden, you know, is weighing heavily on them. But tell us about your careers, because you, I know, have had many different businesses or experiences in the business world, and also being an activist. So what was the catalyst of change?
I think my, well, yeah, to speak to the different iterations of self, which have been my life journey. It's all been in connection to my conscious evolution. Yeah. You know, I spent many years being a narcissist and lost. And I had spent many years abusing substances, and because I didn't know who I was and I had no purpose. And I couldn't find it from anything that was around me. And so through that process, I had to change. Luckily, I realized that needed to happen. So I changed my circumstances. I seeked out people that could give me some more information about how to manage these internal conflicts and challenges. And through that process, I realized that what I was doing was not serving me. So that was it seems to be a 7-year cycle for myself, up until this point in time, where I've just I've evolved and I've found that what I'm doing is not in service, and it's not congruent from my values and my vision. And so in turn have found different passions and different things to be doing. But there's always been an anchor in some sort of culture, whether that be horticulture, which I studied when I left school, or permaculture, which I fell in love with when I realized we need to find a different way. And then agriculture, because when I realized that, well, we need to be able to feed everyone doing it a different way. We need to be able to scale that in a healthy way. And that's where regenerative style, better practice agriculture became a big focus of mine. And I guess I'm just humbled and in gratitude that now at this time in my life, I've found purpose and passion where they've been able to come together. And I get lit up every day when I go to work, whatever the hell that means. It doesn't feel like it's work. It's just another extension of what I want to be doing in the world and how I can be of best service in the world at this moment in time. So, yeah, that process is still continuing and will continue. And I don't believe that in my next lifetime there will still be another continuum of this soul's journey. I'm studying Dharma practice, thing called planetary Dharma, which is kind of a fusion of Indo-Tibetan psychotechnologies and Western transpersonal technologies, because I realize that I still must continue to evolve and I still must continue to challenge myself and become the best version I can, because that's what the world needs right now. We need to find, you know, that it's kind of, for me, it's like ancient futures. It's like we need to embrace all the beauty of the past and all the beauty that we can create now, but bring that into some sort of harmonic blend that is suitable for this time on Earth, which is a very challenging, dynamic one for many at the moment.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. And, you know, unless we're like Dalai Lama level, you know, we're all continuing to evolve. And over the years, I've been blessed with so many spiritual teachers and Thich Nhat Hanh in France, you know, the beautiful retreats, Plum Village. And it's all, you know, it just warms my heart. And here, when I lived in Sydney, I used to go to the Vietnamese monks retreats down near Wollongong. And I just think, you know, when the student's ready, the master appears, and we go through different phases of our lives and we're constantly evolving. And people, you know, will say to me, how can you live a life where you don't know where you're going to be tomorrow? You know, I can make a plan, but depending on the weather or circumstances, I go in a different direction. And it's like, it's more exciting because you get to do things that you would never ever dream of in your wildest dreams, you know. And also you're being of service when, and this I believe is the biggest vibration, and this is what we've all come here for, to be of service, whether it's to ourselves, others, or the planet. And this is the highest vibration. So it's about, you mentioned your soul and future journey of your soul in other lifetimes. You know, it's about preparing now for next generation so they can be the best version of themselves, and we can also. And that heart connection, I don't get involved with what's happening with the wars and everything around. It's like I'm just working on building love and being in the vibration of love, because where love is, fear, anxiety, stress, they don't exist. Yes, things happen in your life. You know, there could be an accident, someone transcends, you know, close to you. But it's all part of our journey, and it's about how we deal with situations. And I think the more evolved you are, you know, starting with meditation to calm your monkey mind. And I also, for years and years, I've taught different forms of breath work, because I believe, you know, we're breathing in the divine love, and we can fill our hearts with this love and then send this love out to whoever we're in contact with, you know, be it the land or people, there's always someone in need and always someone we can help on the journey. So it's wonderful that you're on this big journey, being of great service. And how did Farmers Footprint Australia come about? And how did you meet Zach Bush, for example, who's doing amazing work?
As always, it just came at the perfect time. I'd actually just finished up a couple of farming projects and was at somewhat of a loose end, but wasn't fazed by that. And a couple of friends pinged me a podcast to listen to and a short film to watch. This might be five years ago, something to that effect. So I watched both of them, and not by chance. One was a podcast that Zach did, and also a short film that was the first feature for Farmers Footprint in the US. And, you know, when you listen and you're listening well, it's like, okay, so that's just landed in my lap on the same day by two different people. Let's tune into that. I resonated with the content, what Zach spoke to and what the film was around. So not being shy, I just reached out and said, hey, this is really important for what's happening in our agricultural systems and creating more awareness with consumers about what they're ingesting into their bodies, subject to that. And we just started building a relationship. And it wasn't long before I realized that there's this beautiful storytelling organization could be used here in Australia to give voice to that. And so we launched maybe 4 years ago, I think maybe 4 years ago, I'd lose track of time, but we birthed and started telling an Australian story. And we're in great communications with our US sister. And since that time, it's grown to have a New Zealand Farmers Footprint as well. And our hope is that we can build these nodes across the globe to give bioregional stories around what our food system could be. And then also have an international presence where we all come together and speak in the larger story, a global story, which I think is super relevant because, I mean, I speak within a Western context and probably a colonial context. It's like all of these places have been colonized. When we think of farming across areas that haven't been, they're still very much in relationship to the earth and on a smaller scale. It's only our colonized areas that have suffered from the industrialization of our food system. So yeah, it's been such a beautiful journey thus far, and have amazing people that sit around us, and I think we've accomplished a lot in a small amount of time with this really small organic and adaptive team of people. And there's so much more to do.
Yeah, for the listeners, can you explain what is Farmers Footprint Australia and what your role is and how you bring so many communities and how you assist the farmers?
So in essence, we're a national not-for-profit, and our vision is to amplify and accelerate the transition to better practice regenerative agriculture, whatever name you'd like to give that. The levers that we get to pull in doing that are creating awareness, education, and support. So we hold events, we create lots of content, whether they're small scale ones on social media or short form films. We have movie nights. I spend a lot of time in conversation like this, whether that with many people across the country. We love just to bring awareness to the reality of where our food system is currently sitting. And we do this without dogma or judgment, because I think we need to kick all that to the curb. There's no right or wrong. There's no pointing of fingers. It's like, we messed up. Let's own it. We need to look to the future and find a way to produce food for everyone in a healthy way that supports all our natural systems, whether that be water function, nutrient cycling, carbon cycling, air, and health of animals and planet. So that's kind of our drive, and the stories that we tell are very much in congruence to that vision. And at the moment, we're really focusing in on these farmer retreats, because we see that as a great catalyst for change. We see that as a great support for our farmers on the ground. For consumers or the eaters, we're looking forward to holding some more events this year, and we've just been having some meetings about some film screenings across the country that people can come to. And we're also doing a really large or an international campaign this year that focuses in on chemical use in our agricultural systems. And we're going to use glyphosate as our poster child. So that's in partnership with the US mob. We've been building out creative scripts to put into action and create, you know, broad spectrum awareness. We're focusing on people that don't know what Roundup is, don't know what glyphosate is, don't know that there's such a chemical suite utilized on the food that they eat. So in that awareness, we feel as if the delivery mechanism needs to be a visual one, but also one that is humorous, because there's enough doom and gloom, and there's enough pointing fingers and should nots. We've realized that if we can create something beautiful and humorous, we're going to be able to draw a lot more attention and bring a lot more people to the table. And we're at the moment funding for that. So we hope to build our first production for a couple of those scripts a little bit later this year. So please stay tuned. And if anyone listening is really interested in what we're doing, I'm happy to share more. And there'll be some web content available to speak to that. But super excited about the potential of this. We really feel that this campaign can attract millions of people and create what there's been a lot of awareness about chemicals in agriculture. There's been a lot of focus on glyphosate, but we're still not seeing the change we want to see. So we need it en masse. We need millions of people to be knocking on doors to change policies. We finally also have the availability of biologicals that can replace these chemical agents that are, you know, downstream harming. There's nowhere you can go these days without glyphosate being in some of the foods that we eat, whether that be wine or beer or cereals that we use for our breakfast, which I don't think anyone should anyway, because it's just a whole load of crap. But that's another story.
We have to have you back. Yeah, do you want to, a lot of people, because this is one of my passions, Roundup and chemicals on the food, and people go, oh, she's off again, but they don't realize, because I've been chatting a lot with many scientists, and a colleague of ours in the UK is working on a remedy for autism, and you know, it's all connected. A lot of the comorbidities like cancers and diabetes, strokes, heart attacks and so forth. And lots of the, for children, you know, it's devastating. It's, I believe it's the highest time in history where there's so many sick children. And, you know, from diabetes, all different attention deficit disorders, autism, as I mentioned. I think it's in Australia, there's 240,000 people on the list that are registered with autism. It's like one in four children have it here, which is outrageous. And it's a global issue because Roundup is global. So can you tell the listeners, because some of them go, oh, yeah, but I only spray a little bit on my weeds. And I know that you're the expert in explaining about how it's water soluble and in the air and so forth.
So a bit of a historical on glyphosate. It came about in the 70s, and it didn't start off by being a herbicide in any way. It was a chelator for drains and pipes. But then they realized that it kills anything it touches from a the plant perspective. And I'm sure Monsanto thought, oh, this can work. This would be good. So there's domestic use is one thing, which I think there's biologicals out there that you really don't need to use it. And you shouldn't be using it because this thing is a water-soluble toxin that gets in everywhere. That affects our soil microbiology. Without soil microbiology, we don't have life on Earth. That 6 inches of soil is what we rely on to support life. And what we don't give reverence to and respect to is the life under our feet. And it's actually an incredible ecosystem of trillions and trillions of microorganisms that we, most of our soils are now devoid of because of the use of these herbicides, insecticides, fungicides, pesticides. Glyphosate is a herbicide. It's used, of course, as you probably know, to kill your weeds. It's on road verges. It's in our schools. It's in our public areas. And it's also used on our food. So if a cropping, someone crop, you know, growing wheat or barley or hops or whatever it may be, wants to start a new field, they'll spray their entire field with glyphosate to kill off all the organic matter and start again. They'll also use it as a desiccant. And that means that if they've got a crop that's close to harvest and there might be rain predicted, they might go and spray that entire crop with glyphosate so they can harvest it before the rain comes. So there's double dosing. And this is not Roundup that you get on the shelf in Bunnings. This is upscaled, you know, triple action. And all of that ends up either in our soil. If it's in our soil, it's going to end up in our waterways because that's where our water goes. And then it ends up in all of our food. And the dysfunction that causes within our bodies, glyphosate affects the tight junctions in our gut lining, which is kind of like the sealer that keeps unwanted out, and that's essential. And why we, you know, leaky gut is one of the issues. I think you could probably have hands full of people that you know in just in your circles that have gut issues. And what we need to take a step back and wonder why all this is happening right now, because it wasn't happening 50 years ago. Could it be that these toxins, these chemicals that we're putting into our foods, and glyphosate's only one of them, one of many. It's astounding to know what is allowed to be used, these ridiculous toxins that are allowed to be used on our food and supported by institutions and government departments to do so. Because we have, and I think we all need to realize as well, is that our institutions, our government departments are somewhat co-opted by large global interests. If they'll often say, just look at the science, and you can look at a science paper and then realize who was that science paper funded by. Science has been co-opted, and science is always a changing and an organic thing. A timeline will show you that. But people rely on these skewed visions and these unfortunate papers to substantiate the continued use of what we now know are things that are poisoning ourselves, our planet, our waterways, and having huge detriment effects on our ability to look to the future with some sort of positivity. So coming back to glyphosate, it's the one that has the most heat on it. It's the one that's most known, and it's why we're utilizing that within our campaign, because people know what Roundup is. People have seen the stories. They've heard about the court cases that have happened across in America. There's a great documentary called Into the Weeds, which speaks of one man who was a parks attendant and a groundskeeper that had huge exposure to glyphosate and ended up with non-Hodgkin's lymphoma and went to court about it and won. And there's been lots of other people which have done the same and won, because these large global interests, now was Monsanto, now Bayer, have covered up and skewed the information around these chemicals that allow them to make a lot of money, but have a hugely detrimental effect And you know, these one or few instances are only the tip of the iceberg as to what effect they've had on our own personal health. And I think most of you could attest to that because you know people that have gut dysfunction, that have autoimmune challenges. As you probably know, that there's some kids, you know, have autism, and all there's causation correlation to the way that we've been growing food for the last 50 years, and it needs to change.
Oh, absolutely. And you covered a lot there. And also the ABC put on a story about five or six farmers in Ballarat that were like five generations or more conventional farmers, and they were all getting Parkinson's disorders.
Paraquat.
Yeah, exactly. Paraquat. And I just, you know, I was talking to many people, and you've only got to Google it. Australia is the only country that hasn't banned any pesticides or harmful chemicals in the last 30 years. You know, like glyphosate, I believe, is banned in about seven countries, and we've not banned one. And with that kill in Meninge, with all the millions of fish last year, they said, the scientists that reported on it said, no, there wasn't enough toxins to kill them. And then independently, the locals got the universities to test the water, and individual chemicals were skyrocketing. But because it wasn't all together, they said, no, it's not toxic. And that was absolutely outrageous. And like you say, if you give it to 10 scientists, you'll get 10 different results depending on who's paying them. You know, so this is heartbreaking. And I was blessed to interview Jillian Michaels in America, the health and fitness guru. And she's a big influencer. And she went to Capitol Hill with some medical researchers, activists, and lobbyists. And she spoke to the Senate there, and you mentioned children's cereals. She said, how come Kellogg's, and she named big, other big food companies, have got more than 600 chemicals here, and much more than what they're using in Canada. She named different food companies, she named politicians, and she named, you know, comorbidities like the ones we mentioned with the cancers and autism, etc. And she said to the politicians, she named a lot of them for corruption, and said, isn't it time that you stop lying in your pocket and think about humanity and how we're going to survive ourselves, and if there will be another generation, because the land is dying, you know? So we need more people like here, especially in Australia, to be the voice and get the message out.
I mean, I think amongst all that challenge and frustration, there's so much hope and potential.
Yeah.
And that's the other part of my trip was the realization of that. Like we really do know how to repair a landscape. We can produce that. There's a lot of institutional, and I don't know who came up with it, but it's like, oh, we need all these things, this suite of chemicals to feed the world. That is just such a crock of, I won't swear, but we waste 30% of our food before it goes to the shop. We waste 30% of our food when it gets sold from the shop, and we waste 30% of our food at home. That in itself shows the kind of culture we've created around food. And it's not true to say that we can't produce enough food without chemicals to feed the world. A lot of the world feeds itself just fine and has done for a long time. It's only since our colonization, our westernization, our commodification of food that we've heard that story. And it was so incredible to see so many farmers that have gone against the grain, met them, seen their landscapes, and seen the vitality that they've created in a short amount of time. To give some context to that, Australia has never seen a hoofed animal. We had megafauna, but after the megafauna, there were no hoofed animals. And when we colonized and introduced hoofed animals like cattle and sheep to Australia, we changed the soil profile forever. We degraded the landscape to the point we are now, where there is complete dysfunction. The paradox in this is that we need the animals to bring it back.
Yeah.
When we graze our animals in a holistic fashion, we have the upside of that. That practice is incredible with bringing back organic matter, bringing back water holding capacity, reinvigorating the biology in the soil so plants can be healthy again. And then the byproducts of that means we've got healthier animals and then better quality food. All of that needs to be done with the use of animals. We can mimic the old ways, the old grazing patterns of the big herds, which is what Alan Savory brought to life many moons ago, and what a lot of organizations in Australia have adopted and realized that this is the way forward. This is the way we can repair our landscapes. It won't be the same as what it was, but it will be something that will provide abundance and food for all. So we have all the wisdom keepers available to us. We have the technology, those technologies available to us. We just need to shift our mindsets and our relationship to our food, to our farmers, to our planet. And then finally, the government will follow suit, because they're always the last ones to change.
Yeah. And also, we have great pioneers here like Peter Andrews, who can help save Australia from all the fires and floods that we're constantly experiencing. And people like Walter Jenny and other, you know, water environmental experts that, you know, so there's, you know, 50 plus years of with Charles Massey and the people I've mentioned, showing that you can restore your land, and the government just turn a blind eye to it. So the proof is in the landscape, but they turn in a blind eye. And you know, I'm not sure if you were stuck in the cyclone in Brisbane or northern New South Wales with your traveling, you know, and all that, you know, we've got so many bare lands. And of course, that's going to affect, people talk about climate change. Of course, that's going to affect our climate change as well. And you talked about the floods and with glyphosate, everything being washed into our rivers, being water soluble, and also then water naturally evaporates. So it's going to be in the air and then in the cloud and then come back down. So whether we're organic farming or not, you know, it's still going to land on our land. So it's like a vicious circle. And you've probably come across Martin Royds, who was five generations conventional farmer. And then he one day using Roundup and his body just exploded. And one of the woofers who was on his land said, "Yes, can I help you?" And he's like, "What do you mean? It's Martin." So he changed overnight. And Rachel Ward, the actress, she realized, you know, after talking to a farm manager, she looked at her grandchildren and thought, "Wow, I want a future that's going to be healthy for them." So like you're saying, there's a lot of people like yourself who really want to get that word out about saving the land. So with your methods of regenerating, how do you manage the water, and do you have ideas on how we can save Australia from all these flooding?
Yeah, that's a I like that you mentioned Peter Andrews, because he's such an incredible being. 20 years ago they thought he was a loony.
Yeah.
Well, he was just a visionary, which happens all the time, right? You know, people with these new visions, these new ideas that don't equate to the current science or the current thinking, cast out and not supported. But he's a a man with huge perseverance. And now his son Stuart is waving that flag and teaching others. And I was at an event recently that Stuart was speaking at, and what I didn't realize is that I think it was 94% of the wetlands in Australia have been destroyed.
Yeah, I'm not sure the exact number, but it's huge.
And that was pretty damning to think that the driest country on earth, and we've had this much effect. What can we expect? What do we expect when we change a landscape to that extent? There is no water management anymore in this country, and I think there's certainly ways and means to change that, but there has to be broad scale adoption and understanding of what these guys speak to, the natural sequence farming, in slowing the water down, and just the fact of bringing back organic matter is a huge factor. Soil devoid of organic matter has no water holding capacity, while a soil rich in organic matter and biology can store incredible amounts of water. So it just the thought of addressing a new way and understanding that we need to change is the start of something. And that's I point people towards these amazing, like Walter again, these amazing people, which have this has been their lives and livelihood, and this is their legacy for us to continue to absorb and then enact. So as far as our Australian landscape, that needs a lot of attention, it needs a lot of love, and needs a lot of care. And we have the wisdom people that want to share this. It's just about the acceptance of that, the understanding that, the acknowledgement of that, and then the action behind it. So that's where the awareness piece comes in for us. There's going to be a continuum of catastrophe if we don't consider it and then start taking action toward it.
Yeah, exactly. And, you know, what Australian farmers are coming up against, you know, is that they have to buy a water license. So you're only allowed to use a certain amount of the water that's on your land. And with Peter's system, you talked about fertility, puts the fertility on the top, the high point, and then the water brings it down. And he's only replicating, slowing the water down like nature used to do before mankind came here, you know, with dead trees crossing the creeks and, you know, rocks falling from the storms and different things. So nature used to do it anyway. And it actually, with, as you said, with the more with the plants on rich soils absorb the water more from healthy soils, which is part of his work as well for regenerating. And it's like a spin-off effect then, you know, because you get better quality food, as you mentioned. So we're eating better quality food. So we're going to be healthier. The animals are going to be healthier. The planet's going to be healthier, you know, because at the moment, Australia's a draining system. So you're draining, the water's coming away too quickly. So it's raping the topsoil. And it's ending up in our rivers, and our oceans are getting damaged, you know, because it's ending up in our oceans as well. But so I think it's conversations like these, you know, are going to bring public awareness to them. And like you say, with the consumers, so they know what they're eating, they know what the farmers are up against, and the farmers do need our love. They need our support. And like any small businesses, it's good to support local. And, you know, because I personally believe, you know, soil health is human health, you know. So if the soil is happy, we are happy. Mother Earth's happy. And, So tell us more about how you see the future for Farmers Footprint in Australia.
If I was to look into the crystal ball, I think we have a there's a huge drive from our small organization to hold national bi-yearly retreats for farmers and get as many as we can into the room to catalyze this opportunity that we have. That's if we could see that over the next, 5 years, we are holding in every state multiple times a year, that would be a really potent potential to not only help with the farmers on an individual, but on the collective as well. Because what we build by having these retreats is a collective, is a group of humans that are now working together, talking together, sharing together, and we build momentum around that. So that's one we've got our eye on, and we're really, really keen to increase our reach and increase our frequency of our events. When it comes to our program around glyphosate, I think that will be a multi-year. The awareness campaign will then evolve into actionable policy change on the ground. So I don't know where that goes, but we certainly have our sights set on also bringing together all of us to the table. Because what we see across, not only across farming communities, but across the circle of activism around this, is siloed people or organizations that wave a flag and scream out loud or do, and they're all doing amazing work. But I always dream about what if we did it all together? What if we, because the traditions talk of the next Buddha is going to be a Sangha. And
right.
That speaks to me is that the next change is going to come from the collective. And we need to see change from the collective. And if we were able to bring all the organizations which are battling against this challenge, whether they be on the ground in agriculture, whether they be people trying to protect their waterways, or doctors and nutritionalists trying to change people's relationship to food and eat better food, what if we all sat at that same table and were able to bring our conversations together into a united force? I believe that would see change.
That's brilliant.
That's one of the dreams with the campaign, is to build that network and invite everyone in.
Brilliant. So if you were to wake up tomorrow, you've had a beautiful sleep, what would be your dream headline? You're on the front page of the newspaper and there's a story about Farmers' Footprint. What would that headline say?
Interesting question. I think it would have to be,
just sink into your heart.
I think it would have to speak to our reconnection to nature. We declare nature, ourselves as part of nature, not separate from it, and it becomes the pillar of decision making within our agricultural system, or all of our systems. It's like suddenly humans realize and work toward a decision-making matrix from within nature, not outside it, not trying to dominate it and control it, being part of it, which we so are. I think if there was a headline, something like that, the world would change for the better forever and the generations to come.
Wonderful. And because you talked about, we found on our travels that all the farmers, it's almost like cause and separation. It's us and them, and there's so many different pioneers doing, I'm doing this, like you mentioned, someone's doing the water, someone's doing this, someone's doing the other. And even with the people, with the food, etc. How can we bring everybody together? Because at the end of the day, It's one farmer, it's one person trying to change the world, and we are all one. So how can we bring this oneness, this unity, true unity, for the highest good of the planet?
It's a really good question, and it's something that I've digressed and ruminated on for some time, because I do feel that there's not one person that can do everything, and we all need, in the big complex web of life, we all get to find where we can be of best service and what our department is, and that's truly needed. And I think but how do we bring that and can create a container for everyone to sit inside that? I don't know if I know the answer to it, because I think a lot of it's got to do with developmental, like understanding that us as beings on earth develop and have because we don't speak about development. We all speak about this flat land kind of humanism. While we are dynamic beings that are on a spec, there's a sacred hierarchy involved with our conscious development. And I think if we were to understand that, we'd be in a better place to be able to find our way amongst it and then speak to everyone where they're at without this kind of one box fits all kind of story. So I don't know what the vessel that contains us all is, but I know that it's going to be aware of that complexity. But maybe there has to be then simplicity on what our shared vision is that we all get to unite behind. And I think you'd come up with something beautiful, a beautiful vision for us all to sit behind.
And before we leave, I always ask my guests, because it's a wellness show, what is your number one health and wellness go-to? A must you have to do every day.
Oh God, my number one, wake up. my number one is to just greet the day. You know, the four directions, the just acknowledge where I am and be present to that. If I don't do that, then I'm not centered, I'm not grounded, I'm not in my heart, and the day can be a bit scattered. I'll hit the cushion most days in meditation, and that's a must for me, but that can be a little bit more organic and adaptive. But I think from a wellness perspective, that's the first thing I need to do is just be present to what is, because we get there by being there, right?
Exactly. You know, our monkey mind is a master of keeping us busy, busy, busy. And most people are seeking outside for an answer. And all we have to do is go within, because what we're seeking is always within us. You know, God, our creator, whatever you want to call it, is within us. And it's about being instead of doing, exactly as you said. So that's a wonderful thing to start your day, and it's been an absolutely amazing chat, and I know many of our listeners are going to benefit from it, especially all your retreats, online stuff, and definitely the glyphosate awareness. And I know they can find it on your website, farmersfootprint.org.au. Is there anything else, Blair, that you would like to share with our listeners?
Yeah, look, if there's any if sparked any interest for anyone listening, please jump on and follow us, our socials. We love engagement, we love perspectives, we love hearing from you. Tune in. We often share about what's happening in Australia, what events are happening. If they're not ours, there's so many more that are incredible people are bringing people together to have bigger, broader conversations around these topics. And it's not just about, we're not just not just about food or agriculture. We realize there's the intersection between farming, food, and health is the bigger conversation. So we implore everyone to start reconnecting to that, because it's where it all begins, and coming back into harmony and relationship to our food brings so much joy from season to season, from sitting around a table with your loved ones, from preparing food for your children. It's all just such a blessing and an opportunity. So you're invited to join, to come to our table anytime.
Well, that's wonderful. And thank you for all you are and all you do. You're such a bright, shining light of inspiration. And many people from COVID and beyond, you know, have lost their pathway, lost their purpose. And just hearing your story from going from, you know, a dark spot to being this light, it gives everybody hope. So thank you and keep shining.
I will. And thank you so much for what you bring to the world. And it's been a beautiful conversation.